Blog Talk Radio.
If you happen to be listening live at this special, very early start time for the 411 Ground and Pound radio show, I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm your host for, well, this afternoon instead of this evening in this case, depending on where you are in the world. Sunday, August 20th here. I mean, you go far enough one direction or the other, you'll wind up, because the earth is round, you bunch of jackasses. Tonight... This is kind of a last-minute thing in a couple of respects. A, the start time being switched was a function of Pat and I deciding that, A, we were actually going to do this, and B, we had lives that preclude our usual start time in this instance. So I apologize for the random schedule shift that went into this, but that's kind of the brief backstory there. But tonight for this show... Pat and I are going to be previewing, it's just Pat and I this evening, Jeff, because of the start time, he lives on the West Coast, for those of you, in the Pacific time zone, so the timing just didn't work out. We're going to be previewing Mayweather-McGregor. Now, there's, if you've listened to this show over the, since this fight was since this fight was first floated, I have no interest, just like straight up, no interest in this. However, it's actually happening. And there are people out there that are interested. A lot of people, if various metrics that have proven generally accurate over the last 10 to 15 years are accurate still, then yeah, a lot of you. So Pat and I decided we're going to set aside our disgust for this fleecing. And we're just... So no gimmicks, minimal jokes. This is his boxing knowledge, my general knowledge, for whatever that's worth. And we're just going to do a prediction, do a preview show. We're just going to analyze as much as we can Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor and how they match up. So nothing but as straight shooting as is humanly possible, given the circumstances around this thing. So with that being said... the amateur boxing historian who really should be paid for this on some level. I don't know how you could monetize your knowledge of boxing, Pat, but you really should because it's deeply impressive. How you doing this evening? Well, afternoon.
Yeah, evening's close enough for us here on the East Coast. I'm doing great, Robert. This scheduling shift is mainly due to myself, so I just want to thank Robert for accommodating me. And for those of you listening, thank you for joining in.
All right. Before we get into trying to break down the fight itself, news pertaining to this fight, and I feel compelled to bring this up, not just because it might actually have an impact on the fight, I don't think it will, but because it might, and also because of how this came about, which is its own issue. The Nevada State Athletic Commission, I believe earlier this week, like Tuesday, might have been Wednesday, voted on the proposal to have Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather box in 8-ounce gloves rather than normally it's 10. And this in and of itself for me is kind of a non-issue. We're not going from 10-ounce gloves to 4-ounce gloves. This is not a major departure. But it's more how they arrived at this conclusion. The end destination is less interesting to me than the journey that these I hesitate to even call them people took to arrive at this conclusion. I believe there's either audio or video of it or a transcribe online. You can find other people's reactions to it. I mean, Pat, A, do you think this is going to make a difference? And B, what in the world is going on with these people who are supposed to be regulating combat sports in the state of Nevada?
I don't think it's going to make a tremendous amount of difference for this particular fight. I think in terms of a bad precedent that's setting, it's going to have lasting implications later on in other fights that will be affected by this ruling. As far as what's going on with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, that's a fair question, because in reality, this is a fight that should not be sanctioned. You have a man with zero official amateur or professional boxing experience coming into a 12-round professional boxing match against the best fighter of his generation with 49 professional bouts, over 100 amateur bouts, and an Olympic berth where he was arguably robbed of the chance to fight for the gold medal, who is a second-generation fighter at that, both amateur and professional, whose entire family has made their living from boxing. So at this point, it's a number of bad precedents being set that shouldn't be sanctioned but are being sanctioned, because quite frankly, if you look at the transcript from the Nevada State Athletic Commission's meeting, they acknowledge that they really don't have any idea what they're doing with this fight. And what they're doing is kind of just throwing their hands up, saying it's going to make a lot of money, let's just do it anyway.
Yeah, I would encourage all of you who are even remotely interested to find said transcript, because Jeff has brought this up repeatedly, and I feel it bears repeating in this instance, that I think we've reached a point in combat sports, particularly MMA, and I bring that up in this instance because I want to get to this separately. But this is a boxing bout. But everything else about it, in a lot of respects, is being driven by the MMA fan base. And there's things that kind of go with that I do wish to get to in just a second. But I think it might be at this point worth investigating finding a single overarching body to at least look at various state athletic commissions. The decision to have combat sports regulated at the state level was necessary for regulation, especially if you get into the history of MMA. And boxing's history is so much longer and deeper that it's a whole other kettle of fish, so to speak. But at that point, we have now entered the world of government bureaucracy. And I don't know how many of you listening to this are from outside of the United States. I don't know what government structure you might fall under. But here, and for most bureaucracies, it's a giant pile of crap. It happens to be, I believe, generally speaking, it is the best option available to humanity at this point. That just makes it the smallest giant pile of crap out of all the giant piles of crap. And I think it bears looking into. I mean, these people, when they were discussing making this choice, they outright ignored. I don't even think they acknowledged various, A, the precedent that they're setting, which Pat mentioned, and B, now look, the relationship between the medical community and any sport community is always slightly contentious, because doctors would rather we not do, you know, physical activity beyond what is necessary to sustain our life. But to just completely ignore, you know, medical opinion when you're dealing with physical combat strikes me as deeply problematic. And I mean, I don't know why the word I'm looking for is escaping me, but I mean, there's just so many problems that go into this. And I got to ask you again. I mean, I know that 10-ounce – are 8-ounce gloves usually used at smaller weight classes in boxing, or – because this got brought up as far as when they were choosing which weight class for McGregor and Mayweather to fight at. But is – are 8-ounce gloves just usually used at lighter weight classes, or is this – I don't want to say a completely radical departure from procedure, but is this, you know, not something that comes up all that often?
Well, you know, we've mentioned before, generally the rule is any bout contested above 147 pounds, which is the welterweight boxing limit, has to be contested in 10-ounce or larger gloves. Generally, 10-ounce gloves are even used at welterweight, junior welterweight, and lightweight bouts. More so because of guys becoming more invested in the health of their hands rather than anything else. It's not like there's a big push to decide that 10-ounce gloves are much safer for the fighter than 8-ounce gloves. In terms of that, it's you generally will see 8-ounce gloves used below 135 pounds most commonly. But once you get to 135 pounds, which is boxing's lightweight class and above, 10-ounce gloves are basically the norm.
Okay. Again, I don't think this will play a terrible impact in this fight, but I agree with you. I don't like the this is one of the things that we tend to either overlook or not fully grasp when it comes to the regulation of combat sports. These are laws, right? This is a set of rules that have been codified by governing bodies into law of the land when it comes to this particular event, this particular sport. As soon as you start opening up variances in established law, I mean, these people are basically setting legal precedent when, to the best of my knowledge, none of them have an actual legal background. I may be wrong about that, so I'm prepared to eat a little bit of crow there, but it's a very dangerous thing because you might get two guys in the future who are killers in the boxing ring who decide that they want 8-ounce gloves instead of 10-ounce gloves, and there's some serious damage that gets laid on people as a result of this.
Well, and looking at it from a U.S.-centric perspective, this is a massively big monetary fight. In the U.S.-centric dollars, Anthony Joshua versus Vladimir Klitschko is not a huge domestic draw here. However, in Germany and England, there were massive numbers generated by that fight. There were to be massive numbers generated by a rematch until Klitschko decided that he was officially going to step away and retire. And while granted, they're not under the umbrella of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, if there's a lot of money to be made, there's no reason why a group like the British Boxing Board of Control, which has generally been more cautious than the U.S. governing bodies in certain instincts, but have still had their number of tragedies happen over the years, there's not necessarily something now that would stop them from saying, well, Anthony Joshua versus Deontay Wilder is going to sell out Wembley Stadium, and we're going to have the first undisputed British heavyweight champions in Lennox Lewis, and it's going to be huge. And they both want to use 8-ounce gloves. Why not? Well, these are big guys who weigh in excess of 240 pounds, hitting each other with everything they've got, who are punchers. So it's a very slippery slope you're starting in at. And let's say that fight didn't happen in England. Let's say that fight happened here in the U.S. in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand. Okay, they could easily make the same petition. Lawyers could get involved and actually win, stating that, yeah, these guys have the right to use 8-ounce gloves. They are consenting to what they're getting into. And all of a sudden, one of them winds up brain dead after the fight. The only precaution like that they've taken in this instance is that they're not allowed to use what are called horsehair gloves, which are largely associated with a Mexican brand called Reyes. Reyes, 15 years ago, and really essentially for the majority of the mid to late 80s, throughout the 90s, into the early 2000s, was the glove of choice for most top flight bouts because they were a horsehair glove, which means it's a softer padding, which lends itself to a harder punch with it. And that's why Reyes always had the nickname of the puncher's glove, whereas Everlast and Grant were considered more a pure boxer's glove because it had a different type of foam padding within it that served to cushion a little bit more and protect your hands a little bit more in addition to your head.
All right. The other thing I want to touch on as far as this fight goes before we get into the actual, like, how these two match up. Last week, might have been the week before as well, there's been significant talk about the substandard ticket sales for this event. There's a lot of still open seating. And when I mentioned earlier that I feel this fight is being driven by I mean, look, there's the unspoken narrative here that this is boxing versus MMA, which is, it's A, it's not, and B, that's a stupid thing to... I yelled about this for years when everyone was talking about how, you know, boxing was dying and MMA was flourishing. And look, I prefer MMA to boxing. Doesn't mean I dislike boxing. And I can't tell you how much crap I took for that in some respects, because I would defend boxing on an MMA website, and my fandom was called into question on one or two occasions. It's supremely stupid. But this is being driven more by the MMA side of things than by the boxing side of things. If you look at how these are, I mean, the ticket prices for this are significant. Pat, are there tickets available for this that are less than $1,000?
I'm curious. I haven't actually gone on. I like to do this because it's fun. I will usually go on like Ticketmaster or StubHub and like see like best available seats for how much money they cost. I haven't done that with this fight, but I think I'm going to live on the air right now, and we're going to see what exactly Ticketmaster has left to give us. And here we are. Floyd, actually, there are, let's see, there are multiple casinos and things hosting it. I'm looking at the one that will be held at the T-Mobile Arena. The budget per ticket price that it's showing is between $1,388 and upwards of $10,985. So if I were to want two tickets, the lowest seats I see are $1,500. That's the lowest price available, is roughly $1,500. The best seats available right now are in section row 1M, which go for $8,572 in one section. I believe we have our whale seat, section 1 row R, $16,573. And section 1 row V, verified resale ticket, price point, Robert, $34,290.
Okay, now this is being priced like a boxing bout. Now, again, you will know more about this than I do, so I'm leaning on you here a little bit. I apologize. But when they announced Mayweather-Pacquiao, A, the prices around this range were not terribly uncommon, if memory serves me correctly, and it sold out rather quickly. Now, granted, Mayweather-Pacquiao, in terms of live audience, was the antithesis of fight fans. It was people there because they wanted to say they were there rather than, you know, actual people who were interested in boxing, but slightly different, and that's a different, you know, point of discussion. People actually paid that much for this, for that bout. I mean, forgive me, you live in a part of the world that gets, you know, UFC events on a semi-regular basis. There's been like one in my state's history. But for the cheapest ticket price available for Mayweather-McGregor, you could get a pretty darn good seat for even a big UFC event, if Again, last time I checked, so my information may be out of date there. But, you know, $1,500 to get into, you know, even a big UFC pay-per-view, that'll get you a pretty darn good seat, all things considered. And, I mean, again, they're pricing this like a big boxing bout when they're really trying more to appeal to the MMA fans, and the MMA fans are just not going to pay that much money. I'll ask you, you know, is this just a failure of, like, not knowing who you're appealing to? Did they massively overestimate interest in this? You know, where did this go wrong as far as, you know, the happy medium between maximizing your money and reaching the widest possible audience?
Well, you know, I think they miscalculated the level of appeal on this to boxing fans. I think they miscalculated the level of appeal as a spectacle level event like a Mayweather Pacquiao was. In terms of, I'm not saying that boxing is necessarily bigger. It is, but that's not the point here. The point is that that was an anticipated fight for a decade of two guys who were legitimately considered the two best boxers of the time period of the era, that at a certain point in time you did not think you were going to see, and was smartly built and positioned where it started with the two of them meeting at a basketball game in center court to shake hands, and the internet was blown away. Papers were blown away that it got people talking. And that was an event, okay? That's the closest thing in boxing terms we've had to Ray Leonard versus Marvin Hagler in terms of a legitimate super fight between the 1 and 1A guys of their era. It was an event there. In terms of the crowd who will go, who are more the casual level of fan, the casual boxing fan is generally still a white-collar presence, whereas the MMA community appeals much more to blue-collar levels of people who don't have that sort of disposable income to throw at an event like this. And I think they really underestimated a lot of people's common sense.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, this got brought up by, again, a lot of the media, but for those of you who have never, I mean, this is an MMA-centered podcast, so I'm going to assume most of you have. If you've ever seen Conor McGregor fight, like, I joke that he carried something like half the population of Ireland in one of his spare suits, because they always showed up to one of his fights, and they were loud, and they were supportive, and it's great for atmosphere, and I'm not complaining by any stretch of the imagination. But they would, his fan base is significant. It is very loyal, and they would travel, you know, on somewhat late notice all the way to Vegas and take up a significant portion of – and make up a significant portion of the fandom. A lot of – and this is from a lot of the media, so this is secondhand. Feel free – everything I say, guys, feel free to – don't take me at face value. Feel free to do your own research. Other people who are more in touch with this than I am have said – that the majority of the Irish contingent that is, you know, the big McGregor supporters literally can't afford this fight. So they won't be there in attendance. I mean, I'm sure they'll buy the pay-per-view in all likelihood, despite that being priced at $100. But we're going to get a very different atmosphere than we're used to. If you're used to a Conor McGregor fight in the MMA context. I really do hope that, you know, they seriously underestimated people's common sense as far as that goes. That would be great. That would restore a little bit of my faith in humanity. All right. Unless there's anything else about the, you know, any of the other elements around this that you wanted to touch on specifically, I think we can move on to talking about how we think this will go. Jack Slack, who I just saw this on Twitter. Somebody told him it's the outcome of Mayweather McGregor is too obvious to waste detailed analysis on. And his response is, yeah, but what else is going on? Which is accurate. So,
I mean, the only thing I would end up adding to is basically that We brought the 8-ounce glove issue, and we've brought up the sluggish ticket sales. I don't think they necessarily are unrelated. I think part of this is trying to push the agenda. The people who are talking about, oh, but if Connor hits him, that's more to jump on this bandwagon and try to push that as the potential of a shocking upset happening. I don't think that's unrelated. I think the 8-ounce glove thing is to try to move ticket sales because they allowed this fight to happen. They sanctioned it despite knowing that they really shouldn't, despite what it is, and we all know what it is. We're not going to get into that. Once the ticket sales weren't there that they were counting on, they need to find ways to pump those up to justify the decision. And I think the 8-ounce glove thing was indeed a play on that.
All right. As for how these two actually match up, I said you can minimal jokes, hopefully, no gimmicks. This is still rough because we know so very little about Connor in a pure boxing perspective. I'm not saying he's a bad boxer. Because honestly, I mean, I've never seen him actually box. There's sparring footage, a little bit, that can be looked at. But anyone who, like, this is one of those things that I was told to me. This was told to me when I started. I have a generally analytical mind, and I was trying to figure out when watching various combat sports, be that, you know, boxing or some of the early infancy of MMA. And even when I was a kid, you know, taking karate, one of my teachers, when I was, you know, sparring and trying to figure out, you know, how things work. I was a small child at the time. I was like 9. But he told me very specifically, don't look at what lands. Look at what lands like 3 blows before the big one. And this was his way of teaching very small me to appreciate how things are set up rather than just look at the big finish. If you look at Conor McGregor's MMA footage, his big finishes are set up more often than not, in fact, I believe universally, with kicks. Now, this is to his supreme credit, because it gets people thinking high and low. It gets people moving the way he wants them to. Fundamentally, you can't kick in boxing. I worry about how he's going to try and set things up. I worry about his conditioning. Connor's had cardio issues. Now, before anyone just brings up, it's not just the loss to Nate Diaz. Look at the second fight. When he wasn't coming off of a staph infection, he's still gassed. Look at his fight with Max Holloway. He slowed down in the third round. I think he still won it, if memory serves, again, to his credit. But this is a demonstrated point of concern. I don't think he's going to gas in 3 rounds or anything, you know, but this is a 12-round fight. They're only 3 minute. For those of you who don't know, boxing is 3 minute rounds instead of 5 minute rounds. But I think that's an issue, and I think it's going to rear its ugly head. Something else about Connor. He cuts. Diaz bloodied him up a little bit, and Nate Diaz does not have the best punching technique in the world. Mendez cut him with an elbow, but, I mean, Jose Aldo, when he was unconscious, landed a left hook that cut Connor around the right eyebrow. And this is not something that is necessarily controllable. There are some excellent fighters who have what's referred to as, I believe, the fighter's curse. Joseph Benavidez, if you need another MMA example. He's talked about it. He has thinner skin and very defined bone structure, so he cuts. Maybe the best boxer in the world, Vasily Lomachenko, has a little bit of this, I think. Because he usually gets a little bit bloody in his fights, despite being superb, because it just doesn't take that much. Some guys mark up and cut easier than others. I think Connor's one of those guys. I have a few other things I want to touch on, but I don't want to monopolize the totality of this. So, Pat, any issues you take with what I said? Anything you want to add to just kind of, you know, how Connor is going to do entering the boxing world?
I know that the main argument that people are throwing out when this when you talk about how ridiculous this fight is that, well, Conor boxes in the UFC. You just pointed out that he, in fact, does not. What Conor does is he kickboxes. Conor uses kicks, particularly to the legs, very, very well to set up his straight left hand up top because that's his best weapon. If you look at probably the Max Holloway fight would be the best illustration of how he uses those kicks to control an opponent's movements, to make them move where he wants them to, and to also preoccupy their defense. That's a great example because Max Holloway is a great MMA fighter, and Conor was able to use this trick early and often enough that it locked up the fight for him and got him the win against probably the best fighter he's fought. He's not going to be able to do that here. He doesn't have that option. He has to use nothing but movement and punches because that's what the boxing game is about. Movement, angles, defense, distance, leverage, and timing, but you can't kick. You have to use punches. And we've seen Conor punch and punch hard, but I haven't seen him do it successfully solely punching and doing nothing else. Even if Floyd can't elbow him to open a cut, because Conor's cut so frequently in fights, there's a buildup of scar tissue in those critical areas. When you have a buildup of scar tissue there, and you don't have the Wanderlei Silva, don't look at me anymore because I'm not the same guy surgery, and you wouldn't recognize me, that scar tissue remains built up, and it makes you more prone to being cut in the future. So I think each of the points you're going with is very valid, and I don't think people realize how much they're going to be taken into effect.
Yeah, if you all need an example of – and this is like real-time example of the efficacy of Conor's punching game when he can – when he chooses to use his kicks to manage and to steer his opponent versus when he doesn't, you have both Nate Diaz fights. If you look at the first fight with Nate Diaz, he dominates that first round. I mean, he wears himself out, but that's a whole other issue as far as this goes. He utilizes kicks a lot to the leg, a lot to the body, to set up his punching offense, which is very effective. In the second fight, throughout that whole first round, he is chopping at Nate's lead leg, and Nate, because he's one of the Diaz brothers, doesn't check leg kicks. But it still opens up his punching game. He dropped Nate like three times in that round. As both fights wore on, in the second fight, watch as it goes into the second and third, he stops kicking, stops setting up his offense. He starts getting into a slugfest with Nate Diaz. I mean, I don't want to bust out one of these old, one of these old chestnuts about, the best advice I can give you, never get involved in a land war in Asia. Only slightly less well known is this. Don't get into a slugfest with the Diaz brothers. That is not ever really going to go your way. Not that you can't beat them. Not that you can't outpunch them even, but that is just the worst way to fight them. When Conor abandons strategy and what he does well in terms of setting up his offense, Nate starts tuning him up. You can, again, feel free. Go back and rewatch those fights. You can see it happen in real time. You brought up one of the big things about boxing, and this gets brought up all the frequently when we talk about ways that MMA still has to evolve, and that is angles and movement. I need to get this off my chest because there are morons out there who are propagating this. Not people necessarily believe it, because if your only source of information is feeding you nothing but lies, I can only fault you so much for buying into that. But there are morons who are propagating that Floyd will struggle with Connor's MMA angles. And there's heavy air quotes around that last bit because I can only assume these people do not, like, fail geometry in junior high. They just, like, they fundamentally failed that or they were high through it. MMA angles, as that term means anything, and I don't think it does, personally, is a function of the UFC conducting its fights in an octagon. This is an eight-sided polygon. Conversely, boxing is contested in a square. This is very basic geometry, people. By definition, the space and the angles that you have at your disposal to utilize in a square are different from those in an octagon. Just, I really feel like the education in America did you all a huge disservice if you can't make that connection. If you've only seen MMA here, I'll give you another example without crossing sports. Those of you who were fans of MMA for long enough might remember Pride. In fact, we use their theme as the opening theme to this podcast. Pride contested all of its fights in a ring. And the really good fighters in Pride, and this was an MMA promotion, the really good ones didn't use MMA angles as such to anyone who'd only ever seen the UFC. Guys like Wanderlei Silva, Mirko Krokop, Fedor when he chose to use it. I'd love to say Gomi, but I can't because his style of fighting very rarely lent itself to the representation of this. But the fighters who really understood, Shogun actually was good at this as well, before his knees went to hell. They would use traditional boxing-based movement to get their opponent either against the ropes or into a corner and then obliterate them. Because once they're in the corner, you can, if you're Wanderlei, you'd grab a tie clinch and suddenly they're either unconscious or in more pain than they know how to handle. Fedor famously outmaneuvered some really good fighters because he knew how to move around a ring. Again, Mirko was great at this. Back guys into a position where they couldn't avoid his offense, or if they were, you know, linear fighters, he'd move around them in open space. People couldn't take him down, not because his hips were great, they were, but not just because of that, but because he never was in a position to be stagnated for space. I mean, that's how Fedor was able to take him down when they fought. He was able to mitigate that, to mitigate the distance and the spacing that Mirko used. And, you know, Fedor on top of you is a terrible, terrible nightmare. At least when he was in his prime. I mean, you know, now it's just kind of sad. But this is MMA angles are a function, to anyone who uses that term, of the surface area utilized. I mean, the angles you use in the UFC don't even work in Bellator. Because Bellator fights in a circle, straight circle.
Yeah, if you look at just the pure dimensions that they're working with, if I'm not mistaken, the UFC octagon is 750 square feet.
They have two. One of them is, I think, 25. The other is 30 in diameter. So feel free to those of you who – I'm not going to tell you. You know what? Those of you who want to know the actual surface area – look up how to find the surface area of an octagon, and I just gave you the relevant dimensions.
And on average, a boxing ring, if it's 20 by 20 feet, we'll say, which is probably what they're going to use for this fight, is 400 square feet. However, because there are not constant cuttings everywhere, like there are on an octagon, it's completely different.
Yeah, one of the big knocks on Krokop, and I hate to bring this up again, but if you want an example, he's a large part of why he struggled in the UFC when he came over after Pride folded was that he was not used to fighting with that kind of spacing. And he struggled setting up his offense. I mean, you can make jokes about going from an organization without drug testing to one with, but it was a real failing of his in terms of preparation, even that he trained in a ring. He didn't train in the right spacing, and as a direct consequence, his best weapons were frequently mitigated. All right. Pat, I'm going to pose this one to you because I've said what I want to say about points that I feel are just being most of the points that I feel are stupid. There's one that again, you will be able to speak to this much more so than I, but everyone and their freaking dog, it seems, if you're picking Connor to win, one of the traditional arguments being used here is that he's a southpaw. Please, Pat, illuminate us, and I'll include myself in this a little bit because I always take something away from your, you know, from what you say. Times that Floyd has struggled with southpaws, including that one that he's beat them all. But just, A, why is this a stupid argument? And B, why are people falling for it?
One, as you just illustrated, of all those southpaws that have significantly hurt Floyd or significantly troubled Floyd Mayweather Jr., how many of them have beaten him?
Not a single one, and some of them were darn good.
Not a single one. Who is the most recent southpaw to fight Floyd Mayweather?
I believe Pacquiao. I forget who Floyd fought in his last fight and whether or not he was a southpaw, but I know Manny is.
Manny Pacquiao is indeed the last southpaw that fought Floyd Mayweather. Didn't seem to have a whole lot of trouble with the guy that was the second best fighter of the era, who also happened to be a southpaw.
Well,
he got
a significant
hit.
Power puncher. For the people bringing up, you know, Connor hits hard.
Yeah. Here's where that whole southpaw myth comes from. Early in his career, when he first moved up to 140 pounds, which is junior welterweight, Floyd took a fight with a veteran named DeMarcus Chop Chop Corley. And Chop Chop was really the first very good southpaw that he fought against. He was presented with southpaw angles from a good veteran fighter for the first time and didn't immediately figure him out. He had a little bit of difficulty in the early rounds. As the fight went on, he became more and more dominant with each passing round. He beat up a very good technician named Sharmbay Mitchell, who had been a two-time world champion and was also a southpaw. And then people kind of came to their senses and were like, well, he fought a good fighter. It wasn't necessarily a southpaw issue. That was DeMarcus Corley's success level. He fought a guy named Zab Judah in 2006. For all his faults, Zab Judah was a good fighter. Zab is probably best known as a guy for, in his era, arguably the fastest hand speed in the game at one point in time. However, Zab was what we called a sprinter, meaning that Zab would look outstanding for the first half of a fight, not know how to pace himself, and slow down visibly and not have anything left over the second half when he needed it. Against Floyd, which is one of the rare times where Floyd has fought someone with superior hand speed, Zab looked good early as predicted. And after the fourth round, he had nothing left for Floyd because his hand speed was gone and Floyd was able to pick everything he was doing. The best he could muster was repeatedly punching Floyd in the balls.
Hey, it worked for Andre
That's
Ward.
That's all. It does work for Andre Ward, but he's also literally a golden boy. But that's what we have on Floyd Mayweather having trouble with southpaws, quote-unquote trouble. He was given difficulty for four rounds of a 12-round fight against Zab Judah, where worst-case scenario, he lost three of those rounds. Worst-case scenario, most people saw those rounds as 2-2 against a guy who was at one time, just months earlier, the undisputed welterweight champion, who had been a two-division world champion and was known for extremely fast hands and good technique over those first four rounds of his career. And again, as a younger fighter against his first good southpaw, he struggled minimally.
as he's gotten older and fought more southpaws, including the very best southpaw that the generation produced, he's looked better and better. The southpaw argument is dismissible by all of those, but most importantly, that O at the end of his record, that's the biggest factor as to why he does not have trouble with southpaws.
Yeah, it's such a non-argument. I get deeply annoyed every time someone brings it up. All right. Talked a little bit about Connor. Now, as far as actually how I think this fight goes, I have a series of questions I'm going to direct specifically to Pat at the end of this because they're for the roundtable that will air, and I'm not going to give mine away here. But as far as how this fight goes, somebody put this, and I forget where I heard it, so my apologies, that seeing some of Connor's recent sparring footage has increased their trying to remember exactly. They feel better about Connor actually winning some rounds, but less good about him actually winning the fight. And I would kind of agree with that. There's a lot of MMA fighters who have been doing some high-level boxing sparring recently and look surprisingly good, especially considering the differences in the sport. I feel Connor will probably win some rounds. Now, part of that is because of how Floyd Mayweather fights. Floyd's a very risk-averse, defensive-minded fighter. He's also completely... Floyd cares about two things, about one thing, really, just one, and that's winning. He's also a smart enough fighter to know that, A, over a 12-round fight, that means I only need 7 rounds, and B, he has tailored so much of his style. Some other boxing guy, and again, I forget the source. I heard Luke Thomas reference this, so there's my source. Floyd is a 6-round fighter, but his 6 rounds are rounds like 6 through 12. He gets better the longer a fight goes. I won't be surprised if Connor wins 1 or maybe even 2 of the first, 4 to 5 rounds. That really won't shock me, because Floyd is perfectly content to give away. This is one of those other things that going from MMA to boxing doesn't make a lot of sense. The most rounds you have in an MMA fight are 5. And if you have 5 rounds, giving away 1 is sometimes acceptable. If you need to take a round off to recharge your batteries, if you're still getting your feet under you, if you're shaking out a mid-fight injury, whatever. Giving away a round in a 5-round fight is somewhat understandable. In fact, necessary at times. Giving away a round in a 3-round fight is borderline suicide. I mean, A, because judging is basically incompetent, and B, because that means you can't give up another round. When you have 9, 10, 12 rounds to play with, yeah, Floyd is more than happy to give up a round or two in the early going to get a read on you. Because as soon as he has a read on you, you've got nothing. I mean, just straight up nothing. So, again, if Connor wins a couple of rounds early in the early going, I won't be terribly shocked. But Floyd knows how to win. He knows over 12. I mean, I don't think he's going to. I won't be shocked if he finishes Connor. I don't think that he's going in there with the only game plan of I have to finish him. And let's not mince words about this, guys. Connor has to finish him. I cannot envision a world where Connor McGregor outboxes Floyd Mayweather Jr. over 12 rounds. If he's going to win, he has to win via finish. That's pretty much all he's got. The other thing that was said about Floyd, not only does he, only care about winning and, again, figured out you only need 7 rounds. He'll take every round you'll give him, but you only really need 7. He's also perfectly content to win a round because he landed one or two more punches than you did. And scoring in boxing while still having plenty of issues is much more refined than scoring in MMA. You don't get a lot of the same issues that you have because boxing, you're just scoring the boxing. Someone like Diego Sanchez or Leonard Garcia never wins a decision in boxing because everyone knows that they're swinging and missing. And there's very little, a lot of the other positions and transitional things in MMA that lend, you know, cloudiness to how you score a fight are simply not necessarily applicable in boxing. I wouldn't be shocked. Again, Conor wins a couple of rounds early, maybe. Wouldn't shock me, but Floyd has made the best fighters of his era, Marcos Maidana, or Canelo Alvarez, or Manny Pacquiao, miss him and look like nearly amateurs. If you ever watch a great fighter fight Floyd Mayweather and that's your only exposure to them, you might be left with the impression that, you know, I might stand a decent chance against them. I can't see Conor actually winning this fight. I imagine he will do better than most boxing people expect. He probably will win a couple of rounds. I can't see him winning the fight. It makes absolutely no sense to me by every appreciable metric for Conor to win this fight. If one of Floyd Mayweather's family members told me that the fix was in was able to prove that he had put money against Floyd, then I might believe it. Might. Other than that, I can't reasonably pick I can't even pick him to win more than three rounds, in all honesty. It's just There's no real reason he should win this fight. Now, that being said, I normally will say at this point, like, crazier things have happened. I'm not sure that I can in this instance. I don't think anything crazier in either the boxing or MMA worlds would have occurred than Conor McGregor knocking out Floyd Mayweather. But I visualize Conor having some measure of success early, fading because Floyd knows how to make you miss and make you wear yourself out, and then Floyd really going to the body pretty heavily and either winning a clear-cut decision or finishing Conor in, say, once we get into the say rounds like 9 through 12. But that's just my take on it. Pat, how do you see this? How do you see this going once they actually get in between the ropes and start throwing punches?
I know we don't have a lot to judge Conor on in terms of pure boxing effort, other than about the 20-second sparring video with Paulie Malignaggi, where he lands a straight left hand, throws kind of an arm punch barrage, and then kind of shoves Paulie to the mat. That's basically what we've got, and we've gotten videos of him hitting the heavy bag and dancing around like a monkey. So that's not a terrible amount to work with. It's not a great amount to work with, but you can see even little things in those clips. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the first round solely based on aggression, because I feel like he's going to immediately charge right at Floyd, try to cut the ring off if he can. He's going to throw a wild barrage of punches, mostly arm punches that don't do a lot, but take a lot of energy to throw. And maybe he wins that round. I don't think he lands anything cleanly. I don't think he lands anything damaging. And I think he closed the gases out in the first round. In the second round, he probably tries the same thing to start with, but his punches lose steam. Floyd starts picking his shots, landing counter right hands early and often, jabbing to the body, and probably coming upstairs with a left hook every now and then. And by the third round, this fight's pretty academic, and I don't see it lasting past the sixth. I think Floyd is going to hit him with a body shot that's going to knock the wind out of him and drop him. He's going to get up and either follow a barrage and either stay down if he goes down, or the referee is going to have to save his life.
All right. The last thing here, again, these are from the round table that the, you know, those who choose to participate in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania will be going in. I will be writing mine in the very near future. I already know what they are, but I have to actually write them out. Since I'm not giving mine away, I figured I'd ask you, and then we'll close up shop here. I know the answer to most of these, but I figure I'll give you the forum. Do you have any interest? I mean, you and I both have expressed that we feel what we feel about this fight, but as it draws closer, is there even, and I'm tailoring this for you, by the way, is there even, like, just the freak show kind of carnival aspect of, you know, you as not the biggest Conor McGregor fan in the world on a purely emotional level, just, are you interested in watching this when it actually happens?
If I were to have to cough up the $100 to order it on pay-per-view, would I do it? No. And I say that as a guy who loves to watch Floyd Mayweather fight. I know that the casual fan wants to call him a runner and all these other, you know, incorrect observations because they don't actually watch him fight and they don't really have an appreciation for what boxing is. I, as a purist, love to watch the guy fight for the same reason I love to watch people like Vasily Lomachenko, Guillermo Rigondeaux fight, because there's so much art to what they do and I can appreciate that coming from that background. Since my cousin will be ordering the fight and has repeatedly asked me to come watch it, I will go watch it because normally there's also a pretty nice spread involved. So, and I like my food, guys. I'm sorry to tell you. But if it was completely on me, like, hey, you can watch this, you can order it, you know, is this a really appealing? No. And I'll tell you why. In both boxing and MMA and sports in general, I've seen my share of freak shows already. You know what the result is every time? Not a surprise. Okay? It's just not. I've seen James Toney fight Randy Couture. I've seen, what are some other stupid things we've seen done? I've seen Butterbean fight Bart Gunn. I've seen Fedor fight Hong Choi Man. I've seen enough stupidity and outrageousness of these types of things to know what we're getting here and to why they don't appeal to me. I've seen Michael Jordan play baseball.
He wasn't the worst ball player on that team.
He was not the worst ball player on that team. However, he was the absolute best basketball player ever that there had been in existence to that point in time, still in his prime years. Perhaps when he's done, if he continues in MMA after this fight, Conor may in fact go down as the best MMA fighter we've ever seen. If he chooses to continue, because he's going to make a lot of money off of this and may in fact suffer career-ending injuries, but that's another point.
All right, next up.
If he chooses to, he may go on to be the greatest MMA fighter in the world. But these two sports are in fact just as different as baseball and basketball.
I would agree. That's actually a more apt metaphor that I'm going to use when people bring up boxing and MMA, because for the longest time, my response was, tennis and volleyball are different, but they both involve a ball and a net. And there's no correlation other than that. All right. Next up, will this break the pay-per-view record set by Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao? For the record, for those of you who don't know, Mayweather and Pacquiao did 4.6 million buys. So does Mayweather-McGregor break that?
I suspect it could easily do 2 million. I suspect 2.5 is not out of reach, which I believe is what Conor did versus Eddie Alvarez.
Something like that, yeah. Might have been one
of
the DX fights, actually.
It could have been the Nate rematch, I would imagine. But I know, I believe his highest buy rate in a UFC fight is 2.5 million. Since
that
is largely the audience that this is going to be catering towards, I don't expect a huge difference in terms of that buy rate. I could see 3. I could see 3.2. I don't see it going past 4.6.
All right. I know this one already, but since it's here, I'll ask you again. I know you already picked Mayweather. I don't need to go over that one. You mentioned this earlier, and I'm curious as to hear you maybe elaborate a little bit here. Does this last longer than 6 rounds?
I don't think it does. I think Connor, and you got to remember, Connor trains up to this point prior to this fight, obviously. Connor trained specifically 4 5-round MMA bouts for an extended period of time, trained for 3-round MMA bouts for a period of time before that. He's had conditioning problems with those. Conditioning in MMA and boxing are two completely different worlds. Don't take my word for it if that's not good enough for you. TJ Dillashaw's word for it if that's good enough for you. He happens to be an MMA world champion who has just sparred with Vasily Lomachenko and will tell you firsthand the differences he experienced. His word on that would be good enough for me in that end. But if you don't take mine, take his. Connor's not going to last 12 rounds, even if he doesn't take a lot of damage, because his conditioning is not going to be there in one training camp for this fight. It's just not. Add to that he likes to cut a frenetic pace where he is constantly tense, moving forward, and flailing a lot with his right arm while trying to measure for a good left-hand shot. In addition, he's going to be hit more and more accurately than he's ever been used to.
That's very true.
That's a problem. And that takes away from your stamina and your ability to persevere during a fight. This will not go past the 6th round.
Alrighty. And finally, officially, you and I have both speculated that this might happen, but somewhat on the spot, will Connor win at least 1 round?
Yeah, I think it's a strategic round for Floyd to kind of take off, let Connor do what it is he wants to do while occasionally just hitting him with a counter shot to let him know, I'm letting you do this. I'm in your head now. I think he wins the 1st round based on that, and I think they get Connor overexcited and hyped, like, you won the first round. And then he gets alive from rounds 2 through 5.
All righty. Yeah, I'll give you guys a quick preview. I have no issue with I think Connor will probably win a round. I mean, I joked about this, and there's only a degree of truth to this, but if I signed tomorrow to fight Floyd Mayweather and was able to get a good, you know, a solid camp in, and I haven't trained or even sparred legitimately in a number of years, Floyd would absolutely clean my clock. There's still a pretty good chance that, A, I would get to round 3, and B, the 1st round might at least be somewhat in dispute. Not because I'm some tough guy, but that's just how Floyd fights. And again, that's not me, like, aggrandizing myself. I mean, Pat could do it. And probably would do better than I do, because Pat's got a legitimate boxing background.
No, I wouldn't do better.
Fair enough.
But let's just be real. I wouldn't do better. I would get whatever he gave me, and that's all I would get, just like you, just like Connor.
Like pretty much anyone he's fought. And, I mean, again, like nobody – that's the other thing about, like, Floyd. If you've ever watched him fight, and really he's the best example of how to learn to appreciate good defense in boxing – nobody really takes anything from him, which is the weirdest thing in the world, especially when you consider the level of competition he's fought. Anything people tend to get from him is just stuff he gives them. And it's bizarre to watch someone do that to exceptional fighters. All right. Any last words on this event? Anything else you want to say before we go into plugs here?
The last thing that I see people giving a reason for in terms of Connor's
probability to win this fight is that Conor hits very hard.
He does.
Okay, this is going to sound like I'm knocking MMA, but don't take it as such. It's a lot easier to knock somebody out with 4-ounce gloves.
Also true.
I'm not saying he cannot knock somebody out with 8-ounce gloves. I'm not saying it's easy to be a UFC fighter. Not the case. However, when the gloves you're wearing are basically only protection for your knuckles, it makes it a lot easier to knock somebody out. It makes it much easier to hit somebody in a critical spot pinpointed like right behind the ear to daze them. It makes it much easier to have a cushion area where your hand can get in when maybe it wouldn't in terms of a boxing match. That's just how it is. On top of that, I've seen Floyd hit. It doesn't happen often because he's so good defensively, but I've seen him hit. I've seen him hit by guys who can punch. I've seen him hit by Manny Pacquiao. I've seen him hit by Oscar De La Hoya. I've seen him hit, although no more than single digits in a round, by Diego Corrales and Diego Corrales' prime. I've seen him hit by Canelo Alvarez. You know how many of those guys knocked him down?
None, I seem to recall. He got hit, but he never got dropped.
I've only seen him really, quote-unquote, stung by a punch twice. Once is from Shane Mosley, who, maybe Shane was getting in there in later years in his career. This happened in 2009, I'm mistaken. Shane hit him with a really good right hand in the second round that definitely jarred him. You know what happened? Floyd didn't let him hit him again. Changed his defensive schematics, whereas everybody knows him for his shoulder roll defense that's predicated with use by guys like James Toney, his father, his uncle. He changed it to a much more traditional hands-up defense while he was getting his faculties back. Didn't get stung again. And started hurting Shane and walking Shane down and making him back up. That's a pretty good indicator of having not only a great chin, but fantastic recovery abilities. The only other guy I saw sting him with a punch is Marcos Maidana. Marcos Maidana basically has bricks for hands.
Yeah.
He hit Floyd with an overhand right. While Floyd was moving in, Floyd immediately clinched him, held tight, they broke, he renegotiated distance, came out, won the next round. That's what Floyd does. Conor, well, yeah, he hits hard. He's got a real good left hand punch. That's really all he's got in terms of power. When he throws his right hand, it's often pawing, it's often only with his arm, and it's generally because he wants to move a guy into his left hand. So he uses the very constant MMA combination of 3-2, which is a hook with your lead hand into a straighter overhand punch with your rear hand, your power hand, as it were. That works in MMA. Again, not just because of the kicks to supplement the movement, but because most MMA fighters don't have good striking fundamentals. Floyd is fundamentals, particularly when you can take out the elements of knees and elbows and kicks, and it's just boxing. That 3-2 doesn't really work in boxing the same way it does in MMA. And it really doesn't work at all when you're with a defensive wizard who constantly trains to counter each individual aspect of those. And does so at blinding speed with just insane muscle memory reaction. Conor may hit him once, maybe. I don't think he will hit him flush. I don't think he will hit him cleanly. But if he does, I don't think he's going to hurt him to the level people think he is. And I certainly don't think he's going to be able to capitalize on it if he does. Because Floyd's already seen it from better. I'll leave the power discussion in the – it's arguable that Floyd's been hit by harder hitters. I think he has, in terms of at least Maidana and Canelo, I would rank those guys as harder pure punchers than Connor. I could be wrong. It's just an observation.
Certainly Maidana. I'd say Maidana unequivocally. Canelo, I'd have to – I need evidence of Connor with boxing gloves, but Maidana almost –
Yeah, Canelo, it's also a situation where Canelo, it's also a situation where he is a much physically larger guy. But either way, I would say unequivocally that I believe both those guys to be harder, pure one-punch punchers than Connor. And he took it from both of them, took it well, and beat them both convincingly. I don't see the guy who's never had a legitimate boxing, sanctioned boxing match, amateur or professional, being able to do anything. I know we've been on this topic at the tail end of some of our recent shows. This is not a boxing match so much as it is people getting a shot to enjoy a what-if scenario in reality for the first time, as opposed to just having to wonder, well, what if, you know, Brock Lesnar got in the ring with Lennox Lewis? But instead of getting an anything goes thing in a situation where both guys, neither one has a distinct advantage because they're in a neutral setting, you are literally putting the ball in Floyd's court. This is a boxing match featuring the best boxer in the world until we see that Floyd is visibly really slipped or that Lomachenko really is as good as we believe him to be, one or the other. Either way, one of the currently two best active boxers, since Floyd is unretired, in the world, pound for pound, and the best fighter of the last 20 years, pound for pound, against a guy who's never fought a professional boxing match, who is not even getting the chance to work his way into four-round, six-round, eight-round bouts and work his way and learn the conditioning and learn the differences and learn the timing and the distance. Nope, he's getting dropped right into it. That's what this is. This is a public execution that's going to make everybody a whole lot of money and leave a lot of morons going, that was what it was?
I mean, and I'll say this, and this is the last word, going to be the last word, then we're going to go into plugs. I remember people's reaction at the end of Mayweather-Pacquiao. And I remember, we did a show,
that doesn't
actually
count Evander Holyfield, by the way.
Fair enough. That's fair. No, I mean, we did one half, like, we did the normal show here, and then we did a second half that was just like you, me, and I think Gavin, where we talked about Mayweather-Pacquiao. And I think I said at the time, to all the people who are flummoxed by this, what did you expect? And I have to say the same thing here. Seriously, put aside a lot of stuff and just, to God, what do you expect? Not what do you want to happen. Not even necessarily what you think will happen, because what you think will happen can be different from what you actually expect. What do you actually expect out of this? What do you actually expect to happen? And if your answer is, if your answer is that Connor knocks out Floyd, I have to, you just can't have ever actually seen Floyd fight. I mean, people who had seen Floyd fight and had seen Manny fight still thought, no, Manny's going to, you know, pressure him and he's going to hurt him and all the, any iteration of that. And I don't know how they convinced themselves of that, but they did. And then afterwards, everyone kind of stood around like, what just happened? There were people legitimately pissed about that. And if they were legitimately pissed about a actual world-class high-level boxing match, I can't imagine what's going to happen after this. All right. Thank you, Pat. Again, apologies to everyone for the different start time, but thanks for being here. Thanks for, you know, letting us, you know, look at this without the, you know, again, the jokes and the gimmicks and some of our personal biases as far as just, you know, what we feel about it and just actually look at this thing for as straight as we possibly could. So thank you for being here. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
You know, I don't have anything currently in the works at the moment. Thank you for everybody who tuned in early. The time differential this weekend is 100% my fault. Robert just accommodated me to get my thoughts on the fight because he apparently wanted to hear them. I hope some of you guys did too. I enjoy bringing them to you. As far as that goes, that's kind of all I have going on right now. Again, thank you all for listening, especially if you're listening, Paige Van Zandt.
Damn it. All right. We'll be back next week at our regular time of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. We will review Mayweather-McGregor for as much as we can. And we'll be back on the MMA schedule because the UFC just kind of got out of the way of this thing, which is not the dumbest decision they've ever made. And we'll be previewing Fight Night 115. It's a Fight Pass exclusive event. You know, it's really not the worst Fight Pass exclusive event I've ever seen on paper. So we'll be previewing that. Again, you can find my thoughts. There will be a roundtable for Mayweather-McGregor. I will be covering Mayweather-McGregor. I got this confirmed this week.
Does that mean you're covering the undercard as well?
Sort of. I talked with Larry about this, and he, because, I mean, I like boxing, but I don't feel as qualified, and I'm certainly not as knowledgeable about it. So for the most of the undercard, I'm going to have to double check. I confirmed that I'm doing
it's
it,
not
and I'm
a,
not
it's,
just doing the main event.
It's not a real strong lineup.
Yeah, I'm just, instead of doing my normal, like, round-by-round stuff, I will probably just do results and quick thoughts about everything that isn't the main event.
Yeah, the main supporting bout is Badu Jack against Nathan Cleverley in a light heavyweight bout. Neither guy is exceptionally well-talented. Badu Jack is a tough guy, and Cleverley likes to punch, but they're not world beaters, really. I know they've both held world championships, but it's not a really great fight in the grand scheme of things, and both guys have their flaws.
You can look forward to that next Saturday in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania. Stop by, say hello. I'm going to appreciate it and need all the help I can get. I just realized it. I'm going to have to actually, like, explain some of the scoring criteria in boxing.
I'll do it right now for you guys if you're listening and you don't understand it. The scoring criteria for boxing is based on, first and foremost, clean, effective punching. That means scoring blows largely unblocked, showing a visible effect on your opponent. Two is, unlike the UFC, which scores just for aggression, the boxing scores for what is called effective aggression. This is the Diego Sanchez-Leonard Garcia principle.
That in place as well, but no one pays attention to it.
This is the Diego Sanchez-Leonard Garcia principle we have put into place.
Yeah.
Where just coming forward does not give you points. If you move forward with effective punching that backs your opponent up, or you move forward to put your opponent at disadvantageous positions, initiate exchanges and get the better of them, that is what is considered effective aggression. Three is called ring generalship, which UFC fans can also recognize as what's called octagon control. But it's better defined here in terms of ring generalship means you have the majority of the round taking place where you want it to. For example, Conor is going to want this fight where Floyd is in the corners and against the ropes. Floyd is going to have his best moments. Actually, Floyd could easily can have his best moments against the ropes and in the corners because he's going to make Conor miss and hit him. But in an idealistic world, such as against Manny Pacquiao, for example, Floyd largely wants this fight contested in the center of the ring where he has space to move his upper body, shift his weight, take a sidestep here, sidestep there, 1 inch over here, 1 inch over here, and counterpunch and control the distance. That is what is known as ring generalship. Octagon control, you have the fight taking place where you want it in the octagon. Ring generalship, you're commanding the space of the ring. The last scoring criteria for boxing is, in fact, defense. Now, you do not place as much emphasis on defense as you do clean, effective punching. However, it is still a scoring criteria because boxing is a sport based around technique, and the ultimate technique used is to hit someone without being hit in return. When you are able to make your opponent miss a large percentage of their punches and you exhibit strong elements of defense, that is a scoring criteria that you will get points for. In terms of knockdowns, a knockdown is generally a one-point deduction from the fighter who was knocked down, unless they are able to mount a strong comeback effort in the round where you feel they largely won the round and were not terribly damaged by the knockdown. You could conceivably score the round 10-9 as opposed to 10-8. In the event of a round that is too close to call for you, much like an MMA, though it is discouraged, you can score a round 10-10. In terms of point deductions for fouls, such as hitting below the belt, hitting behind the head, use of elbows, excessive clinching, etc., you will receive generally a one-point deduction, another point deduction, and then the fight will be, end up in a disqualification if a referee holds firm. Should a fighter lose a point for fouling of some type, they would automatically be deducted a point on the cards and at best hope for a score of 9 for the round. So, in a hypothetical scenario, if a fighter is largely winning a round but is deducted a point for a foul they had been earlier warned for, you could score that round 9-9. Because while they did win the round, and the opponent who loses the round has to be given a score of 9 or less, the winner would have to be scored a 9 because they already have a one-point deduction against them. You can score a 10-8 round without a knockdown. If the beating that is given is so severe where an opponent is very visibly hurt and in terrible trouble, or if a round was so dominant that even without tremendous amount of punishment being taken, but the other fighter is so nullified by the competent fighter who's winning the round, you can also score that 10-8. An example of this would have been when Roy Jones fought Vinny Pazienza, and Vinny Pazienza set a CompuBox record by landing 0 punches within a round.
I forgot that. That was great.
Yeah, that would be an example of a round you could easily score 10-8 without the presence of a knockdown or real significant visible damage where a guy is staggered from a punch or hurt and knocked against the ropes, those types of things. Those come into play. Generally, while it is very rare, you will not see a man knocked down more than 3 times in a round. Judges are hesitant to score a round at a greater margin than 10 points to 7 points because they feel it's creating an unfair advantage, which is wrong. If a fighter is knocked down 3 times in a round, deduct 3 points from that fighter and score that round 10-6.
Is there a 3 knockdown rule in place for this fight? Because I know sometimes if you knock down 3 times in a round, you just lose.
The 3 knockdown rule is only in effect within certain state commissions where a world title is not at stake. There is no world title at stake here, nor should there be. However, the Nevada State Athletic Commission does not utilize a 3 knockdown rule.
Yep. All right. Fair enough.
There is no standing 8 count. You cannot be saved by the bell in any round, including the 12th and final round. And only the referee has the authority to stop the fight.
Wait, your corner can't stop the fight for this one?
The corner can throw in the towel. The referee, and it's standard that once the corner does that, the referee will then stop the fight. However, the corner throwing in the towel does not automatically mean the referee has to stop the fight.
Okay.
There's actually an example of this in a Miguel Cotto fight against Jury Foreman from Yankee Stadium where Foreman's corner threw in the towel because he had a bad knee, and Arthur McCanty Jr. decided Foreman pleading he wanted to go, was having moments in the round, decided I'm going to let it go.
Alrighty. And as far as the referee only having authority to stop the fight for this is a clarification purpose for a lot of people. Some states will allow a doctor to stop the fight. In this instance, if the referee, it would be a referee stopping the fight on the advice of the doctor, not the doctor actually stopping the fight.
Correct.
And you know, another serious point of contention across, you know, different states, how they handle that. So for the record,
And I think we should clarify what legal blows would be in this fight. Punches to the back of the head. Punches thrown with a backward motion, essentially a back fist, are not legal. I know these are thrown in MMA frequently. The punches to the back of the head, not so much deliberately as they are just from circumstances of positioning. But they do happen, and they happen frequently. Boxing, they are much less frequently due to accidental and much more frequent due to deliberate in terms of deliberately breaking the rules. You often see this in clinches, which we may have a few of early in this fight.
I imagine we will. Floyd's clinch is excellent.
And it's, again, an orthodox and a southpaw fighter. Feet are going to become entangled. So clinching will happen early and often, and usually in there you will see a guy try to sneak in rabbit punches. Those are not legal. Throwing a punch with what's considered a back fist is not legal. A punch must come straight or from a curved outside angle. They cannot come from a backwards angle at the opponent. Connor often flicks a jab like that with his right hand. That's not legal, and he's going to be admonished if he does it. Superman punches, which have been much talked about, are legal. They just don't work.
If you can't – Superman punches work in MMA because you get people thinking about kicks and other feints. When all you're worried about is punching, yeah, no. They're much easier to read.
And that pretty much should cover anyone who is not familiar with boxing scoring criteria, the legality of certain techniques, how a fight is stopped, and how a fight is scored.
Yeah, this needs to be brought up, because when it was announced, there were a bunch of people asking if Conor McGregor could use the spinning back fist, which is, A, confirms you don't actually watch boxing. And B, there's the really obvious, like, non-answer that I like, that I heard others give and decided I would use it if anyone asked. Sure, he can use it, but he can't win with it.
Yeah, Floyd can win if he uses a spinning back fist. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. All right, I will...
Either because he's going to eat a tremendous body punch or he'll land it and get disqualified.
Yeah, either way. I will be... I am posting a brief summation of those essential rules at the top of that when Saturday rolls around. So, again, stop by, say hello. This is my first time actually covering a boxing bout in this context. So, be an adventure. We'll see how that goes. And, again, we'll be back next week. As for where else you can find me, Mark Radlich and I did our big summer blockbuster movie wrap-up on Tuesday. This coming Tuesday, he and I will be reviewing the 8-episode Marvel's The Defenders Netflix series. I know your perspective. It'll be an interesting discussion. It's not without flaws, but... and here, where I separate myself from most critics, much as I enjoyed it, as a general rule, it is far from perfect. And just because I enjoyed it doesn't exempt it from criticism. So again, this Tuesday, he and I will be doing that. I enjoyed it more than he did. So, and whenever Mark and I have differing opinions, we usually have interesting discussions. So, tune in for that. And again, just Saturday for Mayweather-McGregor. I hope you'll all tune in, follow along, keep me company while I try to stay sane. All right, that's it. Thank you to Pat for being here. Always happy to talk boxing with you. Always an education for me. I appreciate it. So thank you very much for being here. Until next week, everybody, when we're back at our regular time, stay safe and please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.